Hi, welcome back to another episode of Let's Compare Notes. My name is Rahul Rao, and it's been a long time, you guys. I thank you for being patient with me. I remember last time we talked, which was roughly about a year ago at this point, a lot of stuff was happening. I was kind of in transition for new jobs, trying to get my mental health, physical health, and emotional health, all that stuff together, which took a lot longer than I expected it to. And it really, it's not really much else to say. A lot has happened, and not a lot of it good. But in an attempt to try and reclaim some of the things that I love, and some of the things that make me a little bit more whole again, I think I'll be coming back to this podcast with a bit more of a renewed vigor. I have new episodes recording. I have, new episodes rather being recorded. But this episode I'm going to release right now is the last one that I released before I kind of took a really extended hiatus from everything. It features one of my good friends, Josh Higgins, who at the time was recently featured in a Huffington Post article for a series of Instagram posts that he made. So we talk about that a little bit. There's a lot of stuff that you're going to hear in here if you're familiar with the Houston scene and such. These are events that have long since happened, but I don't know. In any case, I really just wanted to do this for you, the listeners, and for Josh, whose episode was pretty good. I like talking with him, even though I may not share the same feelings of the album. Oh, shit. God damn, I've been away from this so long, I've totally forgotten how to do this intro. The album we are listening today is going to be, are listening to today. Jeez, dude. I don't know what's going on. The album we are listening to today is Simple Math by Manchester Orchestra. This is a pop-punk band from the early 2000s. Josh has a bit more knowledge on the history than I do, but that's kind of a basic rundown, the most basic rundown that I can give you that will make the most sense to you and me, because I'm not familiar with the world of pop punk, but you'll hear that in the episode. I mean, there's really not much to say. I just hope you guys enjoy it. Stick around after the exit, after the plugs. I'll talk to you more there. All right, and welcome back to another episode of Let's Compare Notes. My guest today, the famous, I suppose, this is weird to say this now, because like you're the only dude who has, besides Catherine Way, who's got like numbers on the board, it seems now. You have stuff that was recognized by HuffPo.
Oh yeah, I guess it's numbers on the board. Yeah,
I mean, hell yeah, it is. Josh Higgins, my man about town, graphic designer extraordinaire, and occasional wrestling enthusiast.
Yeah,
it sure is. Josh, how are you, man?
I'm all right. Doing good.
Cool. I'm glad we were able to finally fucking meet. I realize like this has been a couple weeks in the making at this point, but like,
yeah,
listened to this album a few times now. Oh yeah, we should probably mention that this is Let's Compare Notes. This is a music show. Today we will be discussing Simple Math by Manchester Orchestra. Josh, if you wouldn't mind telling myself and the audience where you sort of came across this album and like what sort of special significance this album has for you.
Sure. I've been a Manchester Orchestra fan pretty much since they kind of first came out. I think in the around like 2005 they came out with their first album. Mm-hmm. And Simple Math, I believe, is their third album, and they've just released their fifth album this past month. So I've been a longtime fan. They're one of my favorite bands, if not my absolute favorite band in the world.
To be fair, the cover of Simple Math is tattooed on your arm.
Yeah.
This is how much of a fan you are.
That's how much I'm a fan, yeah. It's not my favorite album of theirs,
mm-hmm.
but it's definitely the album I think represents them the best in their overall evolution of as a band. It kind of has the full range of the kinds of songs that they write.
Okay.
And it's also kind of the most clear conceptual album that they've had from start to finish, whereas other albums may have more hits on them. This one is kind of a really good story from start to finish and really encapsulates a lot of the band.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mention the word story. A lot of the research that I did on this particular album said that this was essentially like the lead person. Not only does he sing, but he kind of just like creates all the music. Andy Hull.
Yeah.
This is apparently the story of his life and to some degree.
Yeah, most of the albums kind of draw from his life, but this is kind of one that's really the kind of most, I think, direct kind of influence from his life.
And I mean, I suppose you're saying that more so because of, like, lyrical content, or is it also just, like, across the board, kind of like an aesthetic instrumental thing?
I think in lyrical content and in some of the interviews he's kind of given, it was kind of this, when he was talking about this album, he was like, really going in to this one with a kind of clear story or situation that he was writing from.
Okay, cool. Well, I mean, other than that, yeah, I suppose we can just go ahead and like get it started. All right, track one from Simple Math by Manchester Orchestra. Dear, spelled D-E-E-R.
Dear, yeah. This album, Simple Math, and their most recent album, they've kind of opened it with this song that kind of feels like an introduction to the record, like it's outside of the record, or it's kind of, it's them as a band stepping away from the record and being like, hey,
okay,
kind of here's a kind of summary of what's gonna happen. And I think that this is one of the best that they've ever done in that style. It does a great job of kind of having this tone of voice that sounds like him speaking directly, you know, to you as kind of the narrator, kind of breaking the fourth wall.
Okay. Any particular highlights for you in this track? I mean, I see my man Josh, again, a very stacked set of notes, comparable to the heaviest hitters that have appeared on this show. So yeah, let's go through your notes, my man. That's the point.
So, in interviews, Andy said, Andy's kind of the main lyricist of the band, lead singer. He said that this was the first song written for the record, and he wrote it kind of coming home, I think coming home from tour, but he was had some rough stuff with his wife, and he was pretty much convinced that they were going to get a divorce. So
did they eventually get one?
No, they did not, and they just had a daughter who was in their latest music video. But yeah, they're doing well, I guess. But yeah, the whole kind of song is kind of the evolution of a relationship falling apart. So you know, opening each of the first verses, he talks about it's like half a year and this is where we are, and then the next verse is like, all right, another half a year and this is where we are again. Some of the kind of the lyrical parts that stick out to me is there's a part where he's like, dear everyone I ever really knew, I acted like an asshole so I could keep my edge on you. And I thought that kind of resonates with me as like a lot of creative type people. It's like when you're going through some rough stuff, you kind of take it out on people around you, or especially in relationships, like people being a jerk to each other just to kind of keep on, you know, I got to keep ahead of this.
Yeah. Man, it's this is a bit of a side note. It is very weird that this opens up with a song about like a relationship. This is very strange, purely coincidental. On the way here, I had to pass by like an ex's house, so that definitely brought up a lot of feelings. I will say this: it made me appreciate the album a little bit more, just on terms of like relationships and how relationships sort of fall apart and come back together, and especially like interrelationships and like dealing with that sort of personal tension. A lot of that was sort of put into a good perspective for me upon driving over here. So, I don't know. Just an interesting side note. Okay.
Yeah.
Track number two with a bullet. Mighty.
So, yeah, the track number one's like a really soft... it's not acoustic, very soft, but like super stripped down. I don't think there's drums in it. It's very soft. And then number two just goes like right into it with a super heavy guitar riff.
It's pretty heavy, yeah.
So that's kind of what makes it feel like it's the first one's kind of a prelude to like the opening. So it's like Mighty's really like kicking it off hard with that groovy riff at the start. I don't really have a ton of notes on this song. It's just really jammy. There's a lyric It's not like I was lost for a purpose. I lost purpose and purposely froze. So it's kind of like going through a relationship. It's like, it's not like I fell out of love or mm-hmm. whatever. I did these feelings on purpose. It's kind of like, oh, these feelings just came up and then I didn't know what to do about them. So I just didn't do anything.
Lost purpose and purposefully froze. Dang. Okay, cool. Number three. With a bullet as well. Pensacola.
Pensacola.
Named after Florida.
Yeah. This is kind of a... The riff in it is kind of upbeat and like kind of poppy.
It is very poppy, I will say this.
But kind of the lyrical content is a little bit... It's heavy, mm-hmm. but it's delivered in this fun... poppy way. It's kind of I think this song is about being on the road and like, you know, traveling around to these cities like mm-hmm. Pensacola, Florida, and just kind of like the feelings of missing your family or missing that relationship back home when you're away doing your thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple lyrical hits are like, it took me all this time to get where I said I would never be, and then I hope it's not out there. I hope eventually you'll see what you've been turning me into. It's all for you.
Hmm.
So it's like...
I will say that that's a pretty, like... That's kind of a bullshit thing to put on someone, I won't lie.
Yeah.
But, at the same time, like... You understand, because, again, if we're taking this in the context of, like, the grander narrative of the band, right? You understand that this moment right here, while it is kind of shitty, it also sort of speaks to the sort of shittiness that our protagonist, I won't specifically say Andy to separate the artist and the persona, yeah. but our protagonist is one of those people who's constantly just, like, driving on the road. There's a line that you put down on your notes as well, which I actually was one of the lines that I had liked a lot. It feels like 37 years and I am nothing but a bank. If we could build our credit score, incredible, they'll surely say.
Yeah.
If we could build our credit score together. Yeah. This kind of... these weird emotions of being out in, like, a place that's unfamiliar to you. It doesn't even necessarily need to be on tour, but just in a place that's unfamiliar to you and... the only sort of connections that you have to the place back home is the fact that, like, you're making sure your people are taken care of, right?
Yeah.
But, like, even then, that to put that in such an arbitrary term as a credit score is very silly, I think.
Yeah.
Just because it's like, oh, well, you know, listen, we're so good together, our credit score is, like, over 800. It's wonderful.
Yeah, we're doing... They're such a great match. All their cars are paid off.
Yeah. Okay. Also, another interesting side note as well. Pensacola, Florida, is where another ex has moved to, as it were.
Did you write this album, maybe?
No.
Or did you ghostwrite it?
No. Not at all. If it had been up to me, I wouldn't have written an album about it, because, like, I'm just too much of a sad boy.
Yeah. There's some other lyrical hits on here. I like I'm the greatest man that never lived, and now I never sleep. I never lost a fight, but never knew I started one. The same. I never knew how capable I would become. It's kind of this thing that's like that's a super heavy three sentences, but it's like kind of this I don't think he really thinks he's the greatest person. I think it's kind of like an ego talking, where it's like any kind of creative person, when you find some success at it, you're like, oh, I wasn't after the success.
Yeah.
But now I've got the success, and now I can't sleep trying to keep that success. And then, like, I never lost a fight, but I never knew I started one. Like, you didn't know that you... hurt people, or you didn't mean to hurt people, but you have hurt people
through the creation of your content or whatever it is.
Yeah. And then it's like, I never knew how I never knew I would be good at this, or I never knew this endeavor would be successful.
Sure.
Yeah,
I definitely feel like a lot of these moments, because I would also consider myself an artist. I think you were definitely a bit more of one than I am to certain degrees, but I definitely feel like a lot of there are lots of moments in this particular album. I mean, we've already covered a few in just in three songs, but there are lots of moments that you will, I'm sure you listening audience, will see or hear, rather, that kind of touch on this idea of, you know, the well of creativity and how far that well of creativity goes and what it means to really pursue a life of, like, creativity to many degrees. And specifically with those lines, right, it's like, you have the impetus to want to continue to create. That has always been your motivating factor. It's just somehow this random thing ends up getting, like, the most attention ever. Yeah. And all of a sudden now, like, eyes are on you and people are, like, wanting you to do something. And, like, that the second line, too, is very... It's very telling. I never lost a fight, but I never knew I started one. That, in a weird way, that sort of relates to, like, internet comments and internet culture, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, especially, like, in any artistic field, or, or any field, really. It's like, anytime you get successful, there's always those people behind your back that, like...
Incredibly that are scrutinizing like,
why,
you. Yeah.
Why are you successful? Or he doesn't deserve that, or you didn't earn it, or I deserve it better.
Yeah, or it's just like, how... I don't understand why you have it. Your thing is not that good to me. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a... I think that's a very much a feeling that we can all kind of relate to. Or at least those who are content creators. I feel weird saying that, but that's like the in thing I gotta say right now. It's fucked, yeah. Man. But okay, cool. We'll just go to number four then. April Fool.
This is another jam. Like, they get... This album is really great. It starts... really rocking and then kind of goes into softness, which one of the things that are really great both within songs and throughout albums is like this tension and release kind of building tension, and then right before kind of it's about to pay off, like backing it down and like going back and forth until they really kind of pay it all off. I think that this song, Andy stated that was kind of coming home on April 1st and like all his wife's stuff was gone. She was gone, and so it's just kind of a song about exploring that feeling and of coming home, and somebody's, you know, you've built this life with isn't there, and what are you gonna do about it, and how do you feel about it? And he does this really great thing that throughout the verses he repeats, you know, lines, but changes them slightly each time. Let's see if I can get some quick hits. Like he throughout the start of the song, he's like, "I'm the once and irreplaceable son." Like, you know, maybe that feeling of like I can't be replaced or you can't replace me. And then by the end, as he's thinking through these things, you know, he comes to the realization, it's like, oh, I'm the once and the finally replaceable. Like, oh, I'm not, you know, I've fucked up the situation, or I did something wrong. Like, I'm not irreplaceable. I am definitely replaceable, and I'm in the wrong here.
Yeah, you must not know about me.
And then after he kind of says, I'm the finally irreplaceable son, it gets to this... It's a... let's go back to the start. It kind of does this part where he's like, I don't care to salvage prayer, but a dent so big comes once every few years, and again I'm left to wait for you. So it's kind of like this, he's really angry at the start, and it's just like, every few years this stuff happens, because you look through his albums, there's kind of this constant tension of balancing, you know, maintaining relationships, and you know, this is a big dent comes once every few years. So in any relationship, that's kind of the truth, is like this huge thing happens, a breakdown kind of happens intermittently, that things can only be smooth sailing for so long, that there's always bumps to get over,
of course.
And so then he kind of repeats that line at the end. He's like, I don't care, so gouge my eyes, I'll spend the rest of my entire life blind, a consequence to you. So he's kind of realized that he's like, all right, I've messed up. Like, I will do anything. Like, I'll gouge out my eyes and...
Wow.
And
a very Pablo Picasso of him.
And then at the very end, like, I don't care if you and I will take the rest of our entire lives. I'm patient here for you. So at the end he mentions, you know, he's kind of angrily saying, like, the stuff happens and I have to wait for you to come around and forgive me, or wait for you to be ready to fix it, and in kind of maybe an angry tone. But then by the end he's like, you know what, I'll wait here forever for you, till, you know, I'll be patient.
Interesting. Yeah. Lots of girlfriend wife talk. All right.
Girlfriend wife talk.
Pale Black Eye, track 5.
Pale Black Eye. This is another one that's kind of got like a poppy guitar riff that's super upbeat, but again, really, really dark. And I think the kind of the meaning of the song is kind of thinking through and feeling through this desperate longing to fix a relationship and heal these invisible scars. I think when he says like a pale black eye, it's like he's kind of talking about, it's like an invisible black, it's, you know, it's pale.
Sure.
So you can't see it. So it's kind of this invisible emotional scar that you're wearing.
Yeah, but it's just as real. It just hurts, but to the naked eye.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which maybe is a little, like, pretentious, but...
it's fine.
Whatever. Yeah, so he's kind of talking through the song. There's a part where he's like, whatever you want, whatever you need, bleed from me, write from me. And he talks about, like, bite your veins and sink your pain into me, like, like, I will take, like, whatever pain you're feeling, I will take it on. It's like, I'm here to carry this burden, and you know, we're here to work this out together, so let's carry that pain together. And then there's a line that's like, goddamn, I'm tired of lying. It's kind of like the big build in the song. He's like, goddamn, I'm tired of lying. I wish I loved you like I used to. So hold on to your pale black eye, because when I sleep alone. So it's just kind of like,
wow.
Like, I wish the love was as, you know, as big and as bright and as strong as it used to be, but like, you know, hold on to that pain, because, you know, I'm alone without you.
Wow. Okay. Track 6, Virgin.
Virgin. So this is one of, like, the big singles off the album. This is one of, like, one of their best songs ever, I think.
Oh, it's wow, like okay.
It's a hefty
praise from Josh Higgins.
Hefty praise. Like, just that guitar, that slow, ambient kind of noise in the background, and then this guitar riff builds, and then there's that kind of... I'd say a creepy children's choir.
Yeah,
in
that
the
is
background.
That is very this is very strange. Like it's an interesting choice, to say the least. And like some of those things that the kids are saying, you're like, whoa, you shouldn't. This is weird. This is weird coming out of the mouths of children sometimes.
But then, yeah, but the way it built, like, it's kind of eerie at first, but then as it builds, it's kind of beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thing that they're saying, like, and the kind of the repeated chorus is, we built this house with our hands and our time and our blood. We built this up in one day to fall downward and rust. And then it switches perspective to, you built this house with your hands and your time and your blood. You built this up in one day to fall downward and rust.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like... me in the relationship, it's like us as a unit, we've built this big thing together, we've spent all our time and our hands, and then in one day, or, you know, kind of, we spent all this time, and then in a relatively short amount of time, one day, it's just completely fallen apart and rusted. And then also the part where it switches perspective to, like, you, it's like, I think it's like, you're leaving, even though you spent so much time on building this thing, and and you're just gonna leave it in one day. And then another, like, lyrical hit I like on it is there's a part where he's like, tried to emphasize and side with both your ghosts, and then in time I swore that I'd take the straight and narrow path, but still won't. So it's kind of that thing of even trying to, like, reconcile a relationship, like, I want to do I want to walk the straight and narrow. I want to do the right thing, but my my demons are, or my flaws are, yeah, are gonna drag me back in again.
All of those like weird, terrible things that like you're constantly, again, our protagonist in the story has been like essentially building up and laying out very bare for us in the first five tracks at this point. Yeah. Like, we are now, for the most part, aware of how this guy is approaching a lot of this stuff. And we also know that it's an incredibly flawed person who is, like, trying to make things, like, right again.
Yeah, like, really burying things raw and saying, like, here's my flaws, like, here's what's happened, like, we gotta, yeah.
Yep. It's very, very uncool of him, I suppose.
Uncool.
And that, I don't know, oversharing's a thing. But at the same time, it's like, whenever you establish that kind of relationship with someone for a long period of time, there's a lot of you that you like give to someone. There's a lot of someone else that gives to you, right? And then, yeah, like, yeah, it's one of those things where it just immediately, like, it'll, like you said, it falls apart for no real particular rhyme or reason, but it just kind of happens, and it's very instantaneous when it happens.
Yeah, it happens so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I should point out that a lot of his songs are, it's like they're reimaginings of real life, or they're like exaggerations of real life.
Creative fiction.
Creative fiction. He cites one of his favorite songwriters is David Bazan of Pedro the Lion.
Oh, cool.
Which Pedro the Lion was one of those bands that's kind of king of kind of reimagining or overimagining a situation, or kind of telling the story from how you've built it in your mind versus how grandiose it feels,
sure,
versus how grandiose it actually maybe was.
Because
when emotion comes into play in relationships, like,
yeah,
these very minor things can feel like major,
like huge changes that are gonna like rock your world forever. And then, yeah, like a week later, people are just okay and over it. Yeah, it's weird how that works out. All right. Speaking of working things out, Simple Math, track 7.
Yes.
This is the title track of the album. Definitely one of the songs that has received a lot of airplay, for sure.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily call it a single, but it's definitely like the other song that people know off of this album.
Yeah, I think it was a single for the album, and it's one that I think they play a lot. It's I'd probably put it up there in one of their top songs as well.
Mm.
But yeah, we're definitely in the realm of by track 7, the tone of the album has gotten less rocky, more soft, and a little bit brooding, or kind of like exploring a little bit more soft emotionally versus kind of raw and angry, a little more vulnerable. So I think Simple Math is just kind of, the whole song is just sitting there thinking through, you know, when a relationship has fallen or is falling apart, or when any kind of big truth in your life has turned out not to be a lie, but to be not what you thought it was.
Sure.
It's kind of thinking through that, and it's kind of thinking, like, one of the quick hits is like, what if it was true and all we thought was wrong? Or what if I was wrong and nobody cared to mention?
So like I suppose this is a pretty bullshit way to put this, but like the rose has lost like some of its appeal. I know there's like a turn of phrase for us, like the lilting bloom. English is a weird language, man. but there is like this phrase, rose colored glasses or something.
Yeah.
This elements of nostalgia. And I suppose it kind of goes back to this idea of like building up this, I don't know, very grand, powerful idea in your mind, only to find it being just like super insignificant and pretty mundane and run of the mill as far as stuff is concerned.
Yeah, there's a couple lines repeated through. One's the truth cannot be fractioned, and then changes to the truth cannot be fashioned. And then back to fractioned again, and I think it's kind of saying, if this thing that I was so sure of, I was, you know, so in love with this thing, and if this thing's not working out, mm-hmm. what if I was wrong about everything Ooh. That I was so sure about?
Wow.
Like, it's kind of getting into that headspace of, like, I was so sure about this thing or this person
sure.
or this move that I was taking or this step or that I was taking, and it didn't work out, or it turned out to be not what I thought it was. So if I was wrong about that, what else have I been wrong about?
Okay.
Or kind of another thing, it's like, what if I was wrong and you never questioned it? What if it was true and all we thought was right was wrong? Like, what if I was wrong about this and nobody ever told me? Or, mm-hmm. you know, I think that's kind of a thought that I have a lot just in my personal life, not even in relationships. Like, what if I was wrong about something
yeah.
I'm thinking or doing? Like, what if I'm so off base with this and then
yeah.
nobody ever told me and I just went on my whole life?
Mm-hmm. I can understand that sort of crippling amount of self-doubt.
Yeah.
Especially when it's like, yeah, again, you have this sort of, I guess this precedent has been laid out that, like, people think you're going to create something really amazing or, like, do something really amazing, and then, like, then they can just as easily say, oh, this was not worth my time. And, yeah, you can feel that sort of palpable tension in, like, what if this really wasn't worth anyone's time? What if this person isn't just being, like, kind of a dick, and they're coming from a place of, like, critical opinion and stuff, right?
Yeah. It's kind of that domino effect of doubt of, like, one thing goes wrong, and you're like, oh, no, like, another thing goes wrong.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
no, yeah.
I'm doing everything wrong.
And then it comes in threes, and then it's just,
yeah.
like, the downward spiral, dude. Yep. Okay. Okay, cool. Yeah. Track 8, Leave It Alone.
Leave It Alone. Leave It Alone is, I think, my favorite song on this album, and one of my favorite songs of all time from theirs.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really beautiful in how soft it starts and how it builds and then gets soft again. It's really has this feeling of him very composed at the start, like, I'm gonna lay out how I feel, and I'm feeling very vulnerable and soft right now, and then just building to, like, this pure devotion or longing for something or someone, and it builds so heavy, and he's kind of screaming it there, and then after he screams it all out, it gets really soft again, and he's like,
yeah,
so this is where I'm at the start. It's like, leave it alone. I planted it once. I assumed it would grow. So it's like, you know, I started this thing. I thought, like,
yeah,
it would sustain itself, you know. So take me or don't, like a 3-hour drive and we got nowhere close. Take me alone. If it's not with you, I've got no place to go. That's kind of the big build is when he's like, take me alone, because if I don't have you, I don't have anything. And after he kind of screams that out, goes back to take me or don't. I've built up this kingdom you'd hopefully loathe. I'm not really sure what that line means. I, you know, I get like he built this whole thing, and I don't know about the loathing part of it.
It could be that perhaps in that moment of leaving it alone. Okay, so we've been, again, we're tracking the story of our protagonist through the album, right? It could be that coming to terms with the fact that, like, he might have been, our protagonist may have been, like, the toxic bad person in this relationship.
Yeah.
I think now, in Leave It Alone, I think that idea is stressed a little bit more, because he is just like, I built up this thing, we started a thing, but you don't like the thing, but I'm still building this thing.
Yeah.
And I understand that I am, like, perhaps not a good person, so you should do your best to distance yourself from me. So this kingdom that we have built together,
yeah.
if there's something wrong with it, like, I want you to feel like there's something wrong with it, and
yeah.
I want you to be able to express that clearly, you know? Because I think another part of this protagonist, right, is that they have trouble communicating, like, clearly and somewhat eloquently their position or their feelings. Hence why, like, there are all these moments of him being just a little too late in order to realize, like, what's going on, you know? By the time everyone's packed up and left, you're only just now figuring it out.
It takes him a long time to form his thoughts and feelings on the situation, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even then, like, when something would have required, like, in, I think it was track 5, one of the previous tracks, right, we mentioned this idea of, like, him coming home and then, like, trying to fix everything, doing his best to fix everything to the point of where he's willing to gouge his eyes out and stuff. Oh, yeah, right?
April Fool.
Yeah. While those are like, that's a wonderful sentiment to have, it sort of feels like a platitude, you know? And I think after, like, the next 3 tracks, I think our main character sort of understands that, like, simply wishing to, I just wish my eyes were gouged out and you'd be back, like, won't really make anything happen unless you actively put in some work to it.
Those platitudes are, like, kind of like these empty, they're empty promises, or mm-hmm. they don't really help the situation.
Not at all. And it's like, how many times has the person that he is telling this to, how many times have they heard that before, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think this track, Leave It Alone, it's kind of him kind of like, all right, I've said all this stuff, like, here is me, take mm-hmm. me alone, take me or don't, like,
yeah.
this is who I am, I've laid it all out, and I've laid out
sure.
how sorry I am, and how much I want to fix it, and all that kind of stuff. I think kind of one of the other things is he says, this replicated fear has thrown me off for years, even though I can't see, I feel it's always haunting me, kicking out my feet and ruining everything. So it's like there's this thing, this part of his personality that maybe it's kind of what you were saying about, like, being too late to
yeah.
to understand things or to recognize things, like, it keeps coming up and kicking out my feet, you know, kicking yeah. my feet out from under me and ruining everything that I've tried to build.
Sure.
So yeah, I think that's, it kind of ends on this note of, if we end up alone, so take me or don't, this, built up this kingdom, hopefully loathe. If we end up alone, a plague on my head and a curse in my home.
Mm.
So it's like, all right, take me or don't take me.
But if you don't take me,
it's like if we end up alone, then it's a plague that I've it's gonna plague my yeah. thoughts and curse me
for yeah.
all the time.
Very dramatic, very Shakespearean of him.
Yeah.
But okay. Yeah. Track 9, Apprehension.
Man, this is a rough, rough song, like, in terms of lyrical content and just how heavy it is.
Mm-hmm.
And he has this way of explaining or saying mm-hmm. really heavy things in such beautiful ways. So this song is, I think, about a real or abstracted miscarriage, or maybe I don't know if it's a real one. It might just be kind of an imagining of, like, sure. our love falling apart is
yeah.
some sort of
like a miscarriage,
like a something. Miscarriage.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. There's a line that God has never been afraid to fill our cups with more than they could hold, till they all overflow and we drown once and for all. It's like, oh, that's like just like a heavy thing of, like, God's never, you know, life isn't not kind or discerning, like,
yeah,
it will rain a shitstorm down on you.
Yep.
Till you know, even in the best of relationships, that can
yeah
just drown you.
Your feet will constantly be kicked out from under you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, okay. Which, yeah, it's like, I guess it kind of leads me to believe that this is kind of an imagined miscarriage, or him trying to think of, like, if we had lost, how would we feel if we had lost something this big? And, yeah, a line, this is one of the most beautiful lines, I think, is like, how could I misconceive I was owed something radically radiant? And then, how could you misconceive our ideals and growing our futures? So it's kind of like playing on this idea of, like, a miscarriage, using the word misconceive.
Yeah.
Like, how could how could have I have believed that I was owed something radically, like,
yeah,
why how did I fool myself that I was owed anything beautiful mm-hmm. in this life, you know?
Sure.
Like,
but then immediately afterwards, right, how did you how could you believe that, like, life would be anything but just, like, kind of shitty?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, wow.
And then, yeah.
Heavy sad stuff.
Heavy.
Okay. And finally, I guess track 10 on this one, Leaky Bricks.
Leaky Bricks. This one kind of plays like a... It's also similar to the first track, kind of feels outside the album a little bit, or like a... The first one feels outside the album in terms of just kind of like a prologue or like a narrator introducing himself.
Sure.
This one kind of plays almost like credits rolling on an album.
Very it's much so.
It's kind of slow and really the vocals are kind of echoey, super reverby, and not very... I mean, they're pretty clear, but it's not as vocal lyrically focused it feels like the other songs on the album. It's just kind of this slow long song to kind of play things out. A really one of my favorite lines on this track and then just on the album is I blamed you for not being someone you could not be, someone you'll never be. So it's kind of a thing that happens a lot in relationships, I think, where people get mad at each other for like
projection of expectation.
I think it happens a lot with high school relationships where it's like you're making that transition to college and it's like how could you be somebody different than who I thought you would be?
Yeah,
you
know, like incredibly formative years of my life. Yeah
it's like when somebody wants to change into some or everybody naturally changes, but it's like how could you change into someone different? And then and then it's kind of like I blamed you for not being someone you could not be, someone you'll never be. Like,
yeah,
how could I place blame on you for being your, you know, for wanting to be yourself?
Yeah, I had no, yeah, oh, man. Yeah, I was gonna say, like, it's that line sort of comes across when you listen to it on the album. It sort of comes across with like this tone of indignance that is immediately like flipped over, because it's like, how could you be the thing? How could you not be the thing that I wanted you to be? But then immediately when you like hear the entirety of the line, it's like, oh, well, it seems my man had a lot more thoughts about like what he wanted out of this, or what he thought he wanted. And again, how can you believe that life's just going to give you a miscarriage, dog? Like, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's kind of him coming to terms with what's happened and... Mm-hmm. kind of being back on it. It feels like things have been tentatively resolved.
Sure.
I guess that's kind of why it feels like a closing credit song. Like,
yeah.
The tone feels like the problems have been somewhat resolved in terms of like, okay, they've reached some sort of commonality or some sort of resolution. And so now here it's this point of honesty and just kind of seeing everything for what it is. There's a part, I've been drinking carefully. I creep into the bedroom to watch you sleep. My mind wanders on to things I can't explain, as if there's something worse to have weaned away your worth when I was so absurd. Well, is there something worse? So it's like, is there anything worse in the, like, you know, I've been drinking and I come in and I look at you and I start thinking of these things that nothing could be worse than for me to have wasted what you are worth. Like, you know,
yeah,
you're this beautiful, valuable thing, and I've weaned away your worth being, you know, being absurd, doing some dumb shit.
Yeah.
And is there something worse than that?
Dang. Well,
yeah.
Shit, man. I didn't expect to, like, to be fair, going into this, I did not expect it to be as heavy on the relationship stuff as it was going to be. But I suppose, you know, that is my own sort of interpretation to put onto it, right? But, 10 tracks. Pretty short. It's only like 45 minutes, not even that.
Yeah, and supposedly they wrote 100 songs for the album.
Wow. And they picked 10.
And they whittled it down. They're like, we whittled it down to the best, like, 35. By doing, like, all killer, no filler, we got it down to 35. And then yeah. From there, it's like, how do you get it down to 10?
How do you even more? Wow, okay, cool. Well, all right. I mean, so I'm sure it goes without saying that you really enjoy this album.
Yeah, I really love this album. It's just such a, from start to finish, a great, beautiful album.
Mm.
And yeah, a lot of heavy themes and thinking through things, but told in ways that are very beautiful and don't
mm-hmm.
feel as heavy as maybe they are. Some sure. of the songs is just like a rockin' jammin' song, and then you're like, wait, what did he just say?
Yeah, for sure. There's this weird sort of, like, undermining of the information that is given to you by putting it on top of, like, essentially, like, power pop.
Yeah, and when you see them in concert, they're really funny, like, guys, and they have, like, a funny web series. Like, they really let loose and are real fun with it, so it's kind of these... I get this feeling from them of, like, we can dive into these heavy things, but we're not afraid to, like, keep it light or to make it rockin'. Like, we're not just sad. Like, it doesn't feel like sad, brooding music.
Mm.
Or, like, it doesn't feel super emo.
Sure.
It just feels like a rockin' music that just kind of drifts in and out of sadness and happiness and up and sure. down. And
okay. Cool. All right. So... as for my notes on this, I do not have any physical notes for you because I kept them all in my head. I gotta stress this point right from the beginning of this. This album was not intended for me at all. Okay, now let me put a caveat to this. Remember, I'm a person who listens to, like, harsh noise unironically.
Mm-hmm.
I have a pretty varied music taste, but it also means that I have some pretty strong likes and dislikes. So in terms of lyrical content, I wasn't really thinking about it too much. Not that my man Andy Hull is not a good lyricist. You clearly demonstrated his worth in that.
Yeah.
When I was approaching listening to the album, I was doing it purely from, like, a musical standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have to talk about it in that regard, I have to say I'm not, like, a huge fan of it.
By any
stretch of the imagination. Like, I really have to vehemently decry a lot of the weird mixing choices on here.
Uh-huh.
I'm just so, like, there's such an egregious use of horns and strings sometimes, and, like, oh man. Okay, I will say this: the song Mighty, the song April Fool, and Leaky Brakes are fucking great. Leaky Brakes especially, because that reminded me a lot of Videotape, that mm-hmm. end song off of the Radiohead album in Rainbows. Not so much in, like, that it's stylistically composed the same way, but it, when you said, like, it's literally credits ending music, like, it made so much sense to me why I had just been thinking about Videotape and its relation to that, because Videotape is literally, like, a credits ending song. Like, it's that powerful of one, and Leaky Brakes fulfills that in, like, such a good way. I like it a lot. Mighty is really good, just because, I mean, Mighty and April Fool, there are moments here, and this is why I can't really say that I hate this album. I can't, because there are so many strange moments on here that remind me of just really fucking cool stuff, but then it's also, like, it's put in a different way to where it's like, so the reason I bring up Mighty is because Mighty straight up is a fucking doom metal song.
Yeah.
It's a doom metal song.
Those three chords and the like, bang,
yeah,
like right at the opening.
Like, he is like playing some really power chordy stuff, but it's all sort of, you know, put on top of this grander narrative structure about relationships falling apart. But then it's also made to be very saccharine by the inclusion of, like, you know, major harmonics and then, like, the, you know, random sporadic sections of, like, strings and horns and stuff, right? Same thing I felt with April Fool. That is, like, another, like, weird doom song, too. But I can't fully get behind it because, like, on the one hand, I'm super piqued and intrigued by, like, the way the music is. But then on the other hand, I have to, like, all of these wonderful things that I'm into are being run through the filter of, like, power pop, pop punk kind of aesthetics, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I always get, like, their earlier, you might like their earlier stuff because this is kind of the shift in the band. Their first two albums are straight up just, like, mighty for every song.
Okay.
Like, rocking and fast.
Yeah.
And no horns, no, like, it's just stripped down rockin' cool music.
Like, I mean, I'm not against horns or strings in any way. I just felt like the ways that they were utilized in here, listening to this album really reminded me about, like, how much I used to really like Bright Eyes and, like, Wilco and stuff. Dismemberment Plan. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All those like emo bands, I guess. I mean, they'd be called hipster bands now or something. But, like, it reminded me a lot of how I really, really enjoy just sort of that singing and songwriting and, like, composition and stuff. And those elements are here in this album. But they're not, I mean, they're not here in the ways that I, in 2017, want.
Yeah.
Because, like, while I wouldn't call this album particularly dated at all, it is definitely, like, pretty sort of archetypical of what we would consider indie rock, though I definitely think it leans more on the rock side for sure. But they have those, like, it's these weird aesthetic choices that, like, I don't understand. And I suppose if we break it into the context of, like, analyzing it with the lyrics and the music, I'm sure it would make more sense to me. But just on that alone, like, or rather just on music alone, excuse me, I don't know. Like, I don't know particularly how I feel. Like, it's not, I would hardly call it a bad album, but, like, I don't know. I feel like my taste is sort of evolved past, like, this point. And another, I suppose a big deal with it to me nowadays is that, like, I do really want to go to a concert now because, like, the way that you described it sounds way more interesting than what I had in mind when listening to this album. I believe
September 8th, they'll be here.
Ooh, okay. Okay, Josh. All right. If you're going to just plug that shit right now. How do I explain this? How do I explain this in a way that avoids any sort of, like, pretension about it? Because I'm trying to keep it as hunted as possible.
Yeah.
It
definitely, in the, amongst fans of the band, I think this kind of usually ranks third in people's favorite albums.
Sure.
If we're
considering the context of their entire discography.
Of their discography. I don't think anybody really ranks it as
number one, number two.
Number one, and I definitely understand where you're coming out with, like, kind of the weird mixing. It's their first album to kind of incorporate these extra elements of
horns
and kind of more ambient stuff outside of just the band.
They're still really young at this point, right? Because I remember that this project got started, or at least in my reading, the project got started when Andy Hall was still in high school.
Yeah, he was like 18 or 19.
Yeah, he apparently homeschooled himself his senior year so he could have more time to just work on music.
Yeah.
Then he released a couple albums and then this one. So, I mean, it feels like we're still talking to, like, a young guy.
Yeah, it's probably mid-20s at oldest, I think.
Yeah. I mean, he definitely, like, and again, this is not a detriment to him by any means. Like, shit, young people are more than welcome to write interesting music, and he's obviously writing cool, interesting shit.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay, I figured out how I was going to say this.
There you go.
So you mentioned their concerts, and their concerts, the way you describe them sounds really fun. The way that it feels that their concerts are more likely to me, or at least from listening to this album, is it's one of those things where you go to the show, maybe you smoke a J or two, get like mad ripped or whatever, bring the vape pen to Revention Center, do whatever. Like you do that, and then the show, or rather your engagement with the show as an audience member, is like swaying gently and like bobbing your head to the rhythm.
Like, oh no, not at all.
Yeah, see, like I would not even be able to tell that
they toured. They toured a lot early on with Brand New.
I would
compare them to like a Brand New that they get. Brand New concerts usually stay pretty heavy.
Yeah.
In terms of just like they stay in the moment and stay very emotional, and they don't kind of break that tension ever. And
sure.
Whereas they'll play like a heavy, like Manchester will play like a heavy song. Mm-hmm. And then kind of diffuse the, like, wow, we were all just running into each other, or, like, we got really angry and we're kind of shoving each other, or we got really emotionally heavy, let's break that tension and get into the next song.
Whoa. Yeah, see, like, I cannot, that, what you have just described does not sound like the band who made this album to me, like... This feels like yo, maybe hold your arms around your bae's waist or whatever, and you're just like, yeah, cool, oh man, this is really emotional, maybe make out during a song or something.
Yeah.
Like, and again, this is not, that is not a particularly bad thing. Yeah. I mean, I go to like a shoo concert and I do the same thing, except I'm not holding anyone because I'm desperately alone. And like, and I mean, it's a shoo concert. I can't bring anyone to that. That's me crying. Or like a Swan show. Done the same thing when I saw Swans, and they're like the heaviest fucking band ever.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not, but they're pretty fucking heavy, and they're really rhythmic. But even then, like, my engagement with the music was very limited. And like, I suppose that's ultimately how I feel about this album, listening to it rather. It's just that my engagement with it was not where I wanted it to be. I was not particularly, I don't know, moved or motivated. I mean, I was moved, don't get me wrong. But it was like, when I listen to like a dance track or something, even though it's like hella repetitive, right? The nature of a dance track and the way that things are layered, like, give you a sense of urgency and a sense of agency whenever you're doing something. And when you engage with it on a live scale, like, regardless of whether or not it's a huge DJ or just some dude on a sequencizer, shouts out to me, regardless of that element that it's in, my level of engagement with it is a lot more. I'm more prone to dancing, I'm more prone to doing shit. Shit, if I even listened to, like, that shit in my car, like, fuck, I'm probably the most embarrassing person to drive with sometimes, because I'll just, like... stoplight dance all the fucking time. Yeah. It's gross. But like, I wasn't really doing that a lot with this album. And I mean, I listened to it a few times and I still came away with Mighty April Fool and Leaky Brakes still being like the things that stuck in my mind the most about this album. But really, I don't know necessarily, like, that's the other part about it too. While what you might be hearing, listeners and Josh, is like pretty negative, and it is, I won't deny it, I'll own that shit, I can't say that I didn't enjoy this. That's probably the part that's been like weirding me out a little bit more. I can't see this getting particularly a lot of replays. However, I'm probably gonna put it on at work tomorrow just to like make everyone else at work listen to it, because like, it's got some things that I'm sort of into, but it's got some things that they would be way into. And I think that this album will be more impactful to me when I share it with more people who are of a mindset that can appreciate it.
Cool. I'm really, like, it doesn't feel like you're being overly negative of the album.
Mm.
Like, it's not like, it's definitely getting better reviews than Hamilton.
Oh, well, okay, so... Hamilton soundtrack is like, listen, that's a tough one. It's like 3 hours, man. I can't just like listen to it multiple times on a car ride. I have to listen to it once on a very long car ride. And I mean, hey, you listened to the mixtape review. I like that one too.
No, it sounds like what you're saying is that, like, it sounds, not to put words in your mouth, but sure. What I think it sounds like you're saying is it's a solid album, it just doesn't resonate, like, the music just doesn't resonate with you.
Yeah, not at all. Not in any sort of way, man, like, emotional or otherwise. I do not find myself bobbing my head when listening to it. I do not find myself particularly, like, attached to the lyrics in any way, yeah. Especially because they're mixed kind of weird. And, like, again, I become very nostalgic for things that, like, I don't want to listen to now because they're not really up my alley as of now. Yeah. But it's like, I remember the days when I was listening to fucking, oh my God, Jesus Christ, a bunch of, like, Decemberish stuff. Yeah. Like,
and this is probably about that time, like, when all that stuff was big, is kind of when, right? this was big. So and maybe that's kind of why it resonates more with me, is that I have direct times to, like, relationships in that time, or, like, listening to it when I was in that emotional state.
Sure. Yeah, hey, I'm sure that happens, that it has occurred too. And I'm probably sure that you definitely have, like, more of a investment in sort of that genre of music.
Yeah.
I mean, based purely on, like, what I know about you.
Sadness.
Yeah, hey, that's fine. we all have it. It's cool. We're just some sad-ass boys here.
No, but I definitely think, like, April Fool, like you said, and Mighty are, like, the songs that, like, when I'm going through discography of Manchester, like, listening to things, like, those are ones that I do not, like...
Yeah, don't skip them.
I don't skip them.
Don't skip them. Yeah, I would honestly, like, I would show those tracks to... people, definitely, like, a few people, and just be like, yo, I know what you're into, and you'd probably be into this, even if, like, shit, Ned would probably get a huge kick out of, like, a couple of these, especially Mighty, like, he'd be way into that, especially because, and I wanted to mention this earlier, Ned does this thing, and it's kind of fucking annoying, but Ned does this thing where whenever he listens to an album, he will skip the first track of the album and go straight to track two. His opinion on this is that, or his reasoning behind it, rather, is that by getting to track two, you are essentially cutting through the meat, or, like, this sort of preambulatory sort of, like, start to an album, which Ned believes sometimes is detrimental.
It's the Cool Whip on top of the pumpkin pie that is an album.
Yeah. And Ned's doesn't like Cool Whip. Yeah. So I guess I find it so strange. But this is probably an instance where, like, he might be way into this more. Because that first track, that one definitely, like, listening to it on my first listen of the album, I audibly went, okay, yeah, all right. Like, in just the most condescending tone ever, and I felt so bad about it, but I couldn't stop myself, because it was just like, I know where this is headed, this ain't for me, dog.
Which, next stop, brooding sad town.
Yeah, like, I'm about to just be, like, a fucking downer.
But then it undercut, like, that next song comes in.
Yeah, completely like, undercuts that.
Oh, you thought this is what you were getting? This is what you're getting.
And then
it's like, psych, no. You're really getting the first
thing. You're really getting the first thing, yeah. Oh my gosh, dude. Yeah. Yeah, like, this album has a lot of... I will say it's got a lot of variety to it in terms of compositional dynamics and stuff. These people know how to make music. Yeah. I can't say that, but... I mean, shit. To be fair, if you're gonna just put me on blast for Hamilton, like, even in Hamilton, like, I felt the same way. At least the original soundtrack, everyone's really great at what they're doing, and, like, it's cool. But
yeah, it's good for a musical.
Yeah,
I'm just not into that kind of musical.
I'm not really into musicals
really. At all. Yeah,
yeah,
but yeah. I think, and I guess the reason I picked this album is because it does have that range of, like, this was kind of a turning point in the band. Their first two albums are more, like, the Mighty kind of stuff, like, hard rock and fast, like, coming out of that brand new style, emo rock. And this is the point where they start transitioning kind of into softer, more indie, more grown-up indie rock type stuff.
Yeah.
Like, this is definitely, it's like...
both in terms of their age or like in a metaphorical sense, like, yeah, this is their mid-20s album. Of like, yeah. All right, we're kind of getting out of the emo stuff, but there's still a little bit of it left.
We have to deal with these emotions, wrestle them.
So, yeah, their albums kind of after this are a little bit more... I guess the one right after this still is a little bit more... leans a little bit more rocking throughout, but definitely has more of the kind of grandiose elements. But their newest one is super kind of lots of ambient stuff in it.
Okay, cool.
And very reverb.
So we go from like super rocking brand new, and now they're doing weird Tim Hecker stuff.
Yeah.
One thing I did definitely want to say though is that while this album is probably not going to get a re-listen by me, I am super interested in listening to, and you were talking about the one right after this called Cope.
Cope, yeah.
I am super interested in listening to that because a lot of people have described that as like the band's post-hardcore album.
I'd say so, yeah.
Yeah, and so I'm kind of want to try that out. I mean, I like just post-rock in general. I like things with posts in them. Post Malone, probably not. That's definitely
you're always at the post office.
Yeah, it's true. I have lots of signs all over the workplace that say post no bills.
Yeah, we have Postmates is delivering us some food shortly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, fuck yeah, dude. I wish. Now I'm hungry. Yeah, I mean, I am definitely... Well, this album didn't exactly sell me on them by any means. It has definitely given me more of a reason to check them out, which I am grateful for in any capacity whatsoever. And fuck, if it turns out that, like, Cope is the jam that I should have been listening to from, like, the beginning, then you may just see me on September 8th, this fucking show, dude.
Yeah, that's what it's like. I kind of picked this album because there's, like, I feel like everybody will find at least one track on here that's, like, okay, that's kind of, if you listen to it throughout, like, there's going to be maybe one, two tracks that anybody who's like, oh, I like more rock and stuff will like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
That kind of vibe I get, especially from earlier stuff, and then on like Mighty and April Fool, and the way he layers vocals, I get this real Nirvana kind of feel to them.
There is definitely that. There are lots of elements of like grunge to it. It's very strange. Again, it's this amalgamation of like a bunch of things that he, like, I suppose has influenced our singer-songwriter Andy Hall, but... None of these things are particularly bad things. Pedro the Lion, questionable. But still good. I do not knock them at all. I don't know. Ultimately, at the end of the day, I just feel like this album is some guys sort of putting their hearts on their sleeves for a little bit and then making something work and trying to figure out where they were as a group. Because, again, we've mentioned this before. We're going to mention it one more fucking time. This is their third album. They are still creating music. They have two more albums after this. Like,
they have another... Like, Cope has a whole second album called Hope, where they took all the songs from Cope and rewrote them into more upbeat, softer, alternate versions of...
Whoa!
That it's really, like, some of the alternates, I like, oh, I like you more than the original.
Wow, that's pretty... Okay, shouts out to them. That's a very heady thing to do. Not many bands... There are only a few bands off the top of my head that I can name that have done similar things. They're just like, this is a secondary, like, an enhancement album. This would enhance the version of whatever
you also, doing. The two main guys from the band also did the soundtrack for Swiss Army Man.
Yes,
where they did not their one direction was you cannot use any like your voices are the instruments.
Voices are the instruments. Yeah. Yeah, and Swiss Army Man is a great soundtrack.
Yeah.
Definitely, man, there was one other thing I was thinking of. Ah, that's right. These guys were on Comedy Bang Bang.
Comedy Bang Bang.
A couple weeks ago. I haven't listened to the episode yet.
Oh, it was so good. They get the people from the Off Book.
Oh, great.
Your new favorite podcast where they improvise musicals.
Oh, great.
And yeah, they do some improvised musical segments at the end that are amazing.
Who does the Off Book? Sorry to plug other podcasts.
Oh, I don't remember. I don't know their names.
Is it the one lady who did
Sarah and I know their first episode has Paul F. Tompkins on it, and it's amazing.
Yeah, I'm sure he's a very good singer. Shouts out to PFT.
PFT.
His cover...
If you're listening, shouts out.
Shouts out to you. I mean, you're on every podcast. You're probably in this one right now. I mean, you are, technically. His cover of How Soon Is Now by The Smiths is really good. Paul, you have a very good voice. It's pretty great.
Yeah, he belts one out at the start that's really amazing. Of the Off Book podcast.
The Off Book.
Off Book.
Yeah, I remember, I think one of the people on there is like, she was on the show, the Comedy Bang Bang show, when they did the musical episode. I thought she was the one who was like, she was supposed to be the Phantom's main squeeze in their like Phantom of the Studio thing. It's all...
It's Jessica McKenna and Zach Reno.
Okay. Definitely not who I was thinking of. But, I mean, I'm sure they're great. I'm going to have to give that a go then. Yeah. I need more stuff to listen to. And, fuck it. You know what? We're going to call this an episode. Josh, I would like to thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. I hope this was everything you had hoped it would be and more, considering that you are an avid listener of this podcast.
Yeah.
Well, great. I'm sure I helped. Man, I don't even know what to say. Like... man, yeah, I hope you enjoyed it, because like, yeah, this is, I realized,
because I didn't enjoy this album.
Oh, no, because I realized that, like, this sort of pulls back the curtain on many episodes that you've listened to.
Yeah, you don't want to meet your heroes.
Yeah, well, hey.
You've lived up to all my expectations.
Thank you, I hope the bar was incredibly low. but yeah, okay, so... We mentioned this at the beginning, but my mans, you are featured in the Huffington Post.
Failing Huffington Post.
Failing Huffington Post. Hey, shouts out to you, Ariana. I mean, dude, you were on the Cleveland show for a little bit. However, the reason you were featured is because for a series of drawings and sort of Valentine's style greeting cards, love cards.
Yeah.
However. They are called intro flirted.
Intro flirted.
This is, of course, if I may go into it a little bit. This is essentially your take on like flirting with someone and hitting on them, but because of the nature of like introversion, you avoid sort of social contact and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So slide someone this card.
Slide him a card.
Yeah. All right.
That won't creep him out at all.
No. As long as you give him like a nice wink and a finger gun.
Guns.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that has been surprisingly, like, again, when it got put on Huffington Post, I was very surprised because I was like, yo, I know that guy.
Yeah.
Wait, I really know that guy. He's not just some arbitrary figure in the scene, like, he's a person that I talk to. It's wild to think about, like, I have to ask, how did you feel when that happened? I mean, you made posts about it, I'm sure you were giddy.
Yeah. I was definitely excited about it, but then there's also this thing, much like this album, talking about the pressure of success.
Damn, dude.
It's like, oh man, I gotta keep the hits coming.
How do I follow this up?
It's like, all these people are watching and they like them. Like, mm-hmm. I have to keep the quality coming and my goal is...
Now it's on recording.
It's recorded. My goal is to do 52 of them. So I post one every Friday on Instagram at introflirted.
Yeah.
Plug. My goal is to do a whole year, 52 of them. And I am at 21,
hey,
I do believe.
You're getting there. You may need to pump out a few more.
Yeah.
Like, just real quick.
Yeah. There's going to be some stinkers coming up.
That's fine. I mean, they can't all be gold.
Yeah, the running list I have is down to like 15, and they're like the 15 that I'm like, I'm slowly picking the least worst one.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Dang. I'm not gonna say it's the best one of the list. It's the least
the
worst.
Least worst.
The least of the least worst of the list. But yeah. it's weird. Like some of the last weeks, like in the last 3 or 4 weeks, have been ones that I'm like driving home, like, I don't have a good one, and I just kind of, something pops in my head, and people are like, this is the best one you've done, and I'm like, I crapped that out in a couple hours.
Yeah, what about the ones that I put time into?
Yeah, the ones where I'm sitting at Rec Room for an hour, like, trying to come up with ideas, slamming my head on the bar.
Yeah, I definitely have that, as a writer, like, I have more often than not, the poems that I've gotten published are the poems that I've given the least amount of shit about. Like, I do not even care. One poem that got published was, like, something that I literally, like, typed up, because I had to fill a quota for, like, how much I could send. And I was going to send 5 poems, but I only had 4. Literally typed it up in the seconds leading up to this email before the deadline. Put it in, and they were like, this is really great. This feels really true and real. And I'm like, what the fuck does that mean?
Yeah, maybe it's because, like, when the deadline's there, like, you stop editing yourself, and it's just, like, it just gets raw. Like, mm-hmm. It gets really raw. Like, you either pump out some, like, really crappy stuff or some stuff that comes, like, right from the heart.
Yeah.
And you don't, like, you don't edit it and rethink it too much. It's just, like...
Just put it out there instantly. Yeah. Yeah, well, like I said, that's a fucking... I mean, that's a pretty big deal, dude. I do hope that you continue to do that shit. I want to see y'all 52 of them.
Yeah.
On your Insta. Intro flirted. But other than that, what else you got going on? Of course, you got the Doomsday Wrestling shit.
Doomsday Wrestling, next show is September 9th, I do believe. I did not write that out beforehand, so I'm hoping that's the date.
It is indeed.
It's the day after the Manchester Orchestra show.
Yes, September 9th.
Because they said the date, and I was like, that we're going to do the wrestling show, and I was like, ooh, I have to choose between wrestling and Manchester. I'm choosing Manchester every time.
Hey, that's fine, but now you don't have to choose. But
now I don't have to choose. You can have both.
Hey, hell yeah. Of course, fucking, there's Doomsday Wrestling. What else you got going on?
The Intro Flirted, HMD Stuff and Things,
mm-hmm.
Which is at HMD Stuff on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Got a big photo shoot coming up next week with Marshall Walker.
Oh, sweet. Okay, yeah. What you doing for that one?
It's kind of the first time. All my stuff is usually just mock-ups or, like, photos that I've taken, and I really want to do, like, really nice photos of my stuff and do, like, a lookbook. So I got Marshall going to do some photography.
Oh, yeah.
I believe Tessa is going to come do some styling and help.
Oh, yeah. Are you going to be a part of her show for the Choose Your Own Self?
I don't think I'm a part of the show, but I think I'm gonna give her some help.
Just ask her. And like, if you're gonna be taking, like, crazy cool photos, just like find a cool fucking, just wear your Kung Fury jacket or some shit, and then just like do something really weird with your face because she's great at makeup. Mm-hmm. The reason I bring that up is coincidentally, I am also probably gonna be in that particular show. Tessa Ehrman, who will be on here at some fucking point, I promise. She is going to be doing a show called Choose Your Own Self, which is just like a series of portraits of people dressed in very elaborate costume. Sounds very exciting. That should be coming up in September.
Yeah, it's good. I'm excited.
Yeah.
She does really amazing stuff.
Very much so. Her looks are pretty on point. They slay, as it were.
They slay, yeah.
I'm not familiar with the lingo. I didn't watch RuPaul's Drag Race. Though I probably should. I hear it's pretty sweet. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We'll see. Anything else?
I think that's it.
Okay. As for me, this podcast, Let's Compare Notes, letscomparenotesblog.wordpress.com if you want to go to the actual site. Otherwise, you can check me out on Stitcher. If you know me in real life, IRL, because I don't have a link yet, but if you know me in real life and you're interested in buying a fucking book, my book of poetry, it's called It Doesn't Have a Name Yet. My man's bought one.
Right on top of the Microsatan zine.
Yeah, excellent. Ooh, shouts out to them. It doesn't have a name yet. It's an okay book. I mean, Josh, what do you think?
I've enjoyed it so far. How far? I'm about a little over a third of the way through.
Cool.
And I've enjoyed it so far.
Yeah, hell yeah. Shouts out to everyone who helped on that. But yeah, if you know me in real life, I'm going to be trying to get some of those printed very soon, some more of them, because I sold out of my first batch. If you know me in real life, just come up to me and ask me about it, and we'll see where it's at. If you want to pre-order or something, I probably can help you out with that. Let's see. Hope if I can post this sometime. Catch me at DIY Storytelling Nights. on Thursdays every month. Catch me at Neo Benchy, first Tuesday of the month. Sometimes catch me at Grown Up Storytime, third Tuesday of the month. Let's see. Oh, yeah, that's right. I have an Instagram now. Fuck, I gotta promote that. Because that's my brand or something. If you want to follow me on Instagram and send me some messages about the podcast or whatever, follow me at Coyote Bloodbath, CoyoteBloodbath. You can do that. If you want to be on this show, send me a message as to why you think you should be on this show. And I'm going to respond to it honestly. And even if it's trash and I'm going to reject you really hard, I'm going to do it. But yeah, suppose it's about it.
Cool.
All right.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you. And that was another episode of Let's Compare Notes. I want to thank everyone for listening. Got to thank Josh Higgins again for being such a sport, especially for taking such a long time and uploading his episode. Just want to make a quick mention of some stuff during the plugs that has kind of changed or has already happened. Excuse me. Intro Flirted Project is going on still, I believe. Josh, of course, the HMD stuff on Instagram, still an applicable link. You can buy all of his cool merch there. He makes a lot of sweet pins as well, enamel pins, if you like that. Tessa Ehrman's show, Choose Your Own Self, went over swimmingly. That opening reception night was awesome. The photo that she took of me was really awesome. I thank her a bunch for it. I'm sorry I haven't reached out to you in such a long time, but I hope you're well. Whatever, you don't listen. I guess the most pressing thing that has happened, I guess, is that that Instagram handle of mine that I plugged, Coyote Bloodbath, is pretty much the main hub of where you're gonna get everything from me. I mean, Coyote Bloodbath is on Twitter and on Facebook as well, but the Twitter and Facebook personas, the Facebook one specifically, is purely for poetry, and it's for the poetry project that I am pursuing. If you just want to generally keep up with all the shows and stuff that I do, or new episodes of Let's Compare Notes, I would say just stick to my Instagram. The direct link to the blog spot, or the WordPress site where the podcast is hosted, you can directly go there. And I mean, I will post flyers to every show and stuff that I perform in. Coyote Bloodbath, CoyoteBloodbath on Instagram and wherever, but mainly on Instagram. Catch me in real life too if you want, if you know me. But other than that, whatever, just ask me how I'm doing, and chances are I'll give you a one-word answer, because I don't know if I can manage more than two. But I'm managing more than two right now, and that's what counts. And, yeah, thanks again, you guys. I really appreciate your patience. I understand, like, uploading consistently is a very important part of podcasting. And the fact that people still continue to ask me, like, what's going on with this podcast at least, like, almost a year after I kind of had to take a very serious stop from doing it. It's really touching, and it's really sweet, and I'm not trying to cry on fucking mic. So, yeah, enjoy that, and I'll see you guys later. Bye.